I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. Don't tell the other podcasts. I should go.
Listen up, the duo we're after are amateur podcasters. They like pop culture references and are guaranteed to go down the most hilarious possible way. So make sure you've got your thunderwear on. We find them, we take them as a team, and we bring them back. And above all else, we don't ever, ever let them get in front of microphones. Let's go hunting, men.
Hi, you're listening to Talking Like a Teen, the podcast where we have a tendency to rush back into our past. I am Ludacris's extra safe.
And I am the many, 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 many beads of sweat on Hobbs' forehead. Why was this man so sweaty? I get it. It's real. It's hot. But my God, he is like... He pretty much invented drip, because that's all my man did in this movie was just...
Okay. I'm fine. I'm looking in my notes, because I had a thing for this.
This is part two of our Fast Five deep dive.
In my notes, I put, dear notes, remind me to ask about The Rock and his whole sweating thing. Good Lord. So no one else is sweating as profusely as he is. And I understand, like, we all perspire different at different levels. But this man, like, I'm a water girly. I drink a lot of water, like a gallon of water a day. This man has to be sweating a gallon of water a day. I can't imagine the intake of water needed to be able to perspire that much and still, like, not be a shriveled up husk of a person.
I wonder if it is all the baby oil he likely used during filming, and they're like, we're just gonna roll with it. It works for his character, considering how he's all like government law dog. I don't know. I just feel like it was a choice to leave it in, because you know how many times they'd have to stop production to like dry this man off? Like, it would never be done. It'd be like Elder Scrolls 6.
Aww. So in the last episode, we chatted a little bit about the beginning bits of Fast Five, and we left off right at the part where we get to talk about my friend and yours, the best actor in the whole entire world, she said sarcastically, being sarcastic, The Rock.
Well, this is when we still loved him, though. This is still, like, he's still climbing that ladder, pretty much going from wrestler who just happens to have a side gig to now bona fide movie star. When this movie came out, it was an event. It was like, holy shit, Riddick versus The Rock. Like, this was like, whatever Godzilla and Kong was trying to do, like, This was a pretty big deal, at least in my circle.
Honestly, I like him in this movie. I think he's great. The first scene that he's in is so good. In about 8 lines total, you get everything this character is about. You've got this guy completely figured out. You know, you can peg him, you know. He's ruthless. He's no nonsense. He has this innate sense of justice, even down to like being able to describe this sense of humor. Like, so many times with a character like this that becomes a well-established sort of thing within a franchise, when you go back and watch their first sort of appearance, it feels like very icky and weird.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like Liara in Mass Effect 1.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Liara trapped in the bubble. Like, The Rock feels like The Rock. I'm going to keep calling him The Rock because I didn't type Hobbs very often, so apologies. Hobbs is Hobbs. Hobbs is Hobbs immediately.
It's at least fun because here he's hamming it up.
Yeah.
Between 5 and 6 is where he at least looks like he fits into the framework.
Yeah.
Before things got too big.
Yeah.
I also apologize. I might accidentally call him Dave a few times, and I probably shouldn't.
Oh, Dave. He's the best. I want to talk about Reyes. Can we talk about Reyes? We haven't really talked about him yet so far.
Reyes is cool. Other being told that he's this dude who's ruling Rio with an iron fist, whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's not as strong as an antagonist that you'd think so. But I guess at this point, Hobbs is really considered the antagonist. So he's just there to be like twirling mustache villain versus actual antagonist. Kind of like with Brian and Johnny Tran in the first movie sort of deal. Or even like Jason Statham in 7 versus like Juman Hansu kind of thing. So it's like, all right, you have your actual antagonist, and then there's the one who just happens to be a dude who's doing bad shit that we just kind of have to worry about for reasons. I don't know. It was just kind of like crime boss by numbers. I didn't really feel overly anything about him. Like, he was good at what he did. I just don't feel like it added anything. And I feel like this movie missed that, because considering his storyline and then Elena's, I think they could have given him more to chew on, because I think he's a fantastic actor.
Exactly. And I think what they set him up as is interesting. His, like, bad guy philosophy. The idea of, like, giving the people something to fear by, like, investing minimally in their infrastructure so that then they feel like they owe you.
That's sinister shit.
I mean, that's capitalism. Hi, hello.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
I even put on my notes, I'm like, if Reyes was a white guy, he would be like Jeff Bezos or something.
Word.
But like, that's really interesting. That's a really interesting concept. I think this makes it more interesting if you do a kind of like the villain from the fourth movie, where he's a lot more charismatic, a lot more like extroverted, and actually like is a charming, interesting guy. This guy is just kind of like warmed up cardboard. He's doing all the things right. Like, he's technically playing a good villain, I guess. It's just that, like, the character on paper is so much more interesting than the character we got. And I don't know if a lot of his stuff was cut or if they gave more stuff to Brazilian Bean to do. Because I feel like you do see a lot more of ZZ than you do of this guy.
Yeah.
This guy, you see him essentially like, put all my shit in the safe. And that's about it.
You're right. I think they could have given Reyes more to do, because what this movie is kind of setting it up to be is Dom and his crew, they're desperate. Things are getting really bad. And now with the DSS on their asses, they have to pull this job to essentially at least just disappear and have the means to kind of sustain themselves while disappearing. And robbing Reyes works because he's this asshole crime boss. But I feel like it could have been more the Robin Hood thing that they eventually do in later movies, where, and maybe that, I guess that's the idea. It's the thing of, yes, their role, their job is very self-serving. It's the, we need money, we need to disappear, and we're going to buy our freedom. Fine. But in doing so, obviously, we're going to now topple this tyrannical leader, which also cool. But yet, fleshing him out would also flesh out Elena, because as Hobbs kind of breaks down in their introduction, her husband was gunned down in the favela, and then like months later, she joins up. But that's only because it wasn't out of like a sense of duty. It was flat out revenge, because what they kind of don't say, but what you sort of infer is, they weren't gunned down by, like, you know, stick-up kids. They were gunned down by Reyes' men.
Yeah.
Because there's a deleted scene where Elena and Hobbs, where one of the spots the crew goes to later on, she's trying to say, like, hey, this is one of the cash houses owned by Reyes. And she's like, I know, you don't care because they're not on your list. why would you cut that out? Because obviously it's a point of, the only reason why she's really drawn up to Hobbs is, hey, maybe I can possibly finesse this dude and help me get rid of this asshole while you're getting rid of these other assholes.
And by cutting stuff like that, it does a disservice to both of their characters, because that's a good character moment for him as well as for her. I feel like her motivation is not all that well explained. Like, you get it, but the more opportunistic side is not really shown very well.
No.
I don't think.
And that same scene, matter of fact, right after they had that exchange about Reyes, he's like, oh, you're going to want to look away. And he climbs like a light pole and finds like a box where obviously I guess the servers for the CCTV cameras are, and just yanks them out. And she's like, oh, I don't think that's standard evidence collecting. And then he's like, oh, there's a woman, of course, because, you know, yo, chauvinism is great. It's like, woman, there's nothing standard about me. And he gets this big goofy smile, which obviously is very much a Fast 6, Fast 7 Hobbs, but that's too early version of Hobbs. So I guess maybe that's why he cut it. But it also shows that he's bent.
Okay, so we're inferring by him being sent to deal with this that, like, the government doesn't even want to take the time to pretend to deal with these guys. So here, we're going to send this guy under the guise of trying to bring these people in, but it's essentially our own version of like an internal hit squad kind of deal.
Yeah, basically, because like Brian said, and it's a thing that is very true, where even the implication that they could have killed federal officers, that's it. Like, they're getting hunted down. Like, they would have been better off just robbing anybody and not having that happen, which is obviously the only reason why it's there, because, yeah, they're not trying to investigate or anything at that point. They were just trying to bring him in for escaping prison or whatever. And Brian, even more so, he was a federal officer who then possibly killed other federal officers if he goes down. Straight to the gulag, my dude.
I know, gulag, again, not funny. Every time my brain goes, goulash, not the same thing.
Yes. When captured, he will be thrown straight into the goulash.
Hell yeah, let's go. He's like,
here you go. Get in that soup, you some bitch. Sorry, I just had this vision of just the Rock
taking
him into like a joint.
That was what he was. He's like him, you know, Brian all bundled up, you know, hands tied behind his back, standing on a plank into a giant bucket of stewy, soupy goodness. And Hobbs is there with a stick poking him. Getting the goulash. This is a dumb bit.
No, this is an amazing bit and it's staying in.
Hi, hello, you are you and I am me. This is TLET Podcast. We are advocates of physical media in all instances except for this one. Reyes, put your shit on a OneDrive. If you had just used cloud-based storage, this movie would not need to exist.
Is this an ad read? Because that was smooth as shit. I was like, oh shit, are we doing ads? I thought this was an ad.
Reyes wants what's on the chip, but maybe in this case, don't put your shit on a chip. I literally said, did they have OneDrives in 2011? And then I Googled it. OneDrive was created in 2007. Bruh, put your shit on a OneDrive. Put your shit in the cloud, and then this whole movie does not need to exist, and the bad guys win. Cloud-based storage.
And my end thing is this, though, and because it does make me wonder, okay, fine, smuggling stuff in a place someone would least likely to find it, fair. You know, like, who would ever think to look in a Ford GT, whatever. But, like, obviously it got seized, so clearly somebody fucked up. Was that ZZ? I feel like he's the type of dude who would have, like, cruised around some sports car and got pulled over. Because, I don't know, it's just, it raises more questions. Like, okay, maybe he's good villain. He's bad at logistics. Because ZZ doesn't look like he's the type that's going to, like, okay, he can shoot and kill people. That's fine. He's clearly a contract killer, but I don't think he knows about, like, standard bookkeeping.
You need a brain guy on your payroll. You need an operations person. Reyes is just not hiring people correctly.
So, with today's sponsor, indeed.
If he had gone to ZipRecruiter...
Oh, no. The Hernan Reyes of job listing sites.
He could have found the perfect operations guy so that his shit didn't end up seized in a car on a train, but instead would have been in the cloud using one OneDrive. Dear corporations, give us our money.
Right? Thanks, Liz.
That Verizon wireless service is just unbeatable. I mean, if I saw a phone like that on TV, I would be like, where is my nearest retailer so I can get one? Can we have our money now?
Sorry, just think about the 30 Rock Verizon bit. It's like, hey, can we please have our money?
Yep. Can we have our money now?
And I said that he's charismatic, but okay, he's not good at like standard villainy at all.
We all have our skill sets.
Well, today's sponsor is Skillshare. That's it. We've officially sold out.
I have a question. I guess I'm trying to gather a temperature check here. The Dom and Elena stuff. How's that hit for you?
Great concept. Could have used a little bit more dialogue. That scene in which they're meeting, we have to do a few things before we move on to the next thing. We have to establish Elena's backstory as to, you know, elaborating on what Hobbs tells us all about her joining the force and everything. We have to actually have a face to the husband. And we also have the idea that these two people lost someone dear to them and essentially find some sort of bond within each other, whether that's purely a physical thing or it's more than that, or if this is essentially just grieving together. Like, it's a really interesting concept because at this point, we don't know that Letty's still alive. So we're assuming that she's not coming back in a franchise. So now we're thinking, okay, now this is not new Letty, but like new partner. And Dom, of course, is the type that like clearly he's still wearing a necklace. So yes, while he's still grieving, and now that he's clearly starting this budding relationship with Elena, that like his heart is still on Letty. I think she is aware of that, but you know, they fulfilled the need for each other. And in that regard, it works, but that's also a lot of reading between the lines because the movie doesn't quite give you that. So of course she's like, oh, why would you risk all this for $20 worth of silver? And then it's like, oh, why would you risk all this? And that's what she gives us, the whole story about how this dude was gunned down and, you know, Rhea sucks. And but then what's the line he says, something about when she asked him, was, you know, something about, was it worth it or something like that? And he's like, I didn't think anybody could understand, but you do. And I was like, wait, we do? Did we determine that?
Right.
That's what got me. It's the last line where I'm like, I know that's there for a reason, but like, I'm like, we could have found an easier way to get there.
I'm thinking about it more and more. This movie is this franchise's Age of Ultron.
Yes.
Is doing a lot of heavy lifting as far as setting up things that seem innocuous now that come to bear fruit later. And not all of it lands.
It doesn't. Though it's funny you should say that. Because mm-hmm. For starters, this movie beats the first Avengers in the course of the massive team up and a mid-credit sequence. Yes. But also, it's interesting because this movie is very well loved. Is considered the best in a franchise, like, to this day.
Yeah.
Whereas Age of Ultron, we're still having Last Jedi-level arguments about that movie. And I'm kind of over it.
That's a future episode, because you and I both love that movie more than most people do. And I would love nothing more than to have the opportunity to present that argument to other people. I don't like the Dom and Elena stuff. I don't like it at all.
Now, is it just their dynamic as a whole or just how we get there?
I don't like it at all is maybe a bit dramatic. I like that they have an immediate connection. I like that it's this, you know, this sort of weird, like, emo kid finding the other emo kid in the room kind of deal. I don't like that it turns romantic. That's the part I don't like. God forbid we have a dude and a lady just being sad friends together.
And I also know that that's early Fast and Furious before, like, the story clearly pivoted towards, like, the new audience. So a lot of that got changed, which is something they clearly tried to correct in 6. Because we'll come back to this. Oh, will we come back to this for that scene?
Yes. Yes, we will.
Oh, my God.
And that's the thing, too, is, like, rewatching this again with some of the knowledge of what happens because of this, I'm just like, this is even more stupid now. with the benefit of hindsight.
Exactly. Because so much stuff was going wrong and trying to fix it, it actually makes things more awkward. And that's something we will talk about pretty much up until whenever the series ends, because it's still happening.
Yeah. This is, again, is like a plot point that's still being fixed. Kind of.
And it's weird. And I think that's why there is a battle between the creative team who understands the heart of the franchise and who's involved versus the audience that they keep trying to court, because there's so many storyline developments where it's literally a tug of war.
It's a bummer because Elena is an interesting character who I think is done a disservice by adding this.
1,000,000%. Or add the thing, right? Keep it romantic, but at least contextualize it. Because I didn't mind them actually being a thing, but I think, and this, God, and it's hard to talk about this without talking about, let's say, Six, when Dom finds out that Letty's still alive. Elena doesn't really question it. Now, I don't know how much of this is just bad writing just to further a plot and taking away her agency, or is this kind of forward thinking as far as her character, where once she's made aware that he's aware,
she's just like, I'm out.
Yeah. And she might have understood that maybe she stood the risk of losing him. Her storyline starts out with revenge, but then actually finds camaraderie with law enforcement. Like, it actually gives her a purpose just outside of being whoever her husband was, wife.
Right.
Which is also kind of badass. So really, where we see it as, oh, he just ditched her to go back to Letty, she's just like, look, at the end of the day, this is how I'm driven. Like, you really were just a stopgap for me to go here. And in that context, it's like, it's less weird. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm trying, because it's like, they tried to fix it, but yeah, it's still, you know, relationships be complicated, y'all.
I can tell what's happening with my notes, because it just turns into like squeeing for a little bit, where it's just like, hell yeah, one last job, heist movie time, all of my friends are here, I love this.
Can we talk about this scene real quick, like the leading up to?
Yes.
The way the music swells before Brian's last line. Keep in mind, I did not see this movie in theaters. Mm-hmm. I wanted to. It was, the summer that came out was not a great summer. Finances were really bad, and I missed this. And also, a friend of mine called me and spoiled the ending for me opening night.
Oh, what?
We don't talk to that person anymore. But yeah, so I was already pissed. But like, I missed the opportunity to have that scene in the theater, knowing full well that this is where they're going to introduce everybody, and audibly get the squee.
Ugh. That's such garbage. Okay. People who spoil things deserve their own circle of hell. It's fine.
Into the goulash they go.
That's right. I'm going to pitch a movie. I'm pitching a movie. Instead of making all of these shitty Calvin and Hobbes movies, I want a movie about Hobbes's original squad.
Interesting.
They all seem very fun. And we don't get to spend a lot of time with them because, spoiler alert, they don't make it to the end of this movie. But what little bit of time we do get to spend with them, they seem very fun. They seem engaging. I want to hang out with them more. Give me a Hobbes doing other stuff prequel with these people. That's my movie pitch.
I do love his, like, that dude. He seems pretty tight with the one that reminds me of Ernest. So I kept calling him, like, Spec Ops Ernest. He's got a cool voice. I feel like he should be, like, doing, like, narration or, like, voice acting.
You know, there's the guy that takes apart the car and is all, like, put upon, and his, like, friend that he's kind of annoying throughout the entire movie. Again, you don't spend much time with them. There's not a ton of character development there, but they just seem fun. There's a movie there. Somebody do something with that.
A movie with him and Elena would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Come on, H, another day. Come on, H, there's a lot of heat, bro. They have guns, bro. More than us. We should leave, bro. Like, I'm pretty sure we will all get shot. Come on, H. It's like, no, I'm gonna glower some more.
Yeah, and then just one guy in the back being like, I'm 3 days away from retirement. What are we doing?
what this movie series should have done had egos, you know, remained in check is use Hobbs, and this isn't mine actually, one of my longtime followers, someone I interact with a lot about Fast and Furious, God, I can't remember their handle because I want to make sure I properly credit them. It's at Voelig, V-O-E-L-L-I-G, followed them for ages on like Twitter and I think even on Blue Sky, but like they're very cool, also very much into the Fast and Furious movies, and they phrased it the best way regarding Hobbs and what he represents, and I like the idea of that. Dom, at least in the whole crew aspect and family, is very much found family, which also shout out Pride Month and all that, because it's still you not here, motherfuckers. Whereas Hobbs is representative of like the very traditional, like, you know, the nuclear family, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Granted, obviously, Hobbs has his quote unquote law enforcement family and then gets kind of like adopted into like, you know, the Fast family. But then as we go further along with Hobbs, it's very much about like his actual like blood family. And I like that as kind of the inverse of Dom. Mm-hmm. Where it started out being blood family and then ballooning from there. And it's a really cool idea because ultimately they both lose their first families, like Dom and his crew. And now with this new crew that we're being introduced to and Hobbs losing his family, in a way his feels more of like an uneasy, like, I don't want to say the word adoption in like traditional sense, but like just as much of they adopted him into their family, but it was always a kind of a tense duty bound situation. Mm-hmm. And I like what he represents. It's just, I wish we got The Rock to do more ensemble stuff and not be The Rock.
I'm going to roll that around in my head for the next like 3 days. I just want you to be aware. I like that a lot. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, shout out to Voelig for kind of introducing that idea. So yes, I'm already kind of squeeing because, you know, this whole scene is amazing. And I literally am like spinning a shirt over my head like I'm Petey Pablo every time the scene comes on.
I love all of our friends are here. It's so exciting to see everyone.
I know.
The next note I have is them telling Tyrese like what he's gonna do when he gets into the police station. It just says, Tyrese, who's gonna do all that? Gang looks at him. Tyrese, what do you mean? Meme. Me, ha, ha, ha. They did an internet before it was an internet. Jennifer Lawrence, what do you mean, .gif.
What do you mean? What do you mean by shaking out? What are you doing? What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
These are the notes. They're not the grade.
I want to know, though, like, how much were they briefed on that meeting? Obviously, we know who gets talked about, because I don't know if I want to mention the whole thing where I feel like their lineup and what they bring to the table should be modified, though. I feel like Giselle and Brian should be your weapons and utilities people. Mm-hmm. Why isn't Han one of the precision drivers? Have you not seen this man drift? That was one of my notes, and that just bugged me, because I'm like, dude is a chameleon, he's very charismatic, everybody loves him, yeah. But it would be funny to let Brian be that guy where he could just pass off as the dumb white tourist. Just blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy, just looked very happy to be there. Even when Vince was cursing out, he still got this very, like, kind of simplistic smile on his face. It's almost like Homer's enemy.
Oh, and here's a picture of me in outer space.
You. When in outer space. You.
Sure. You've never been?
You did it. Congratulations, you win this round.
Yo, let's go!
Because he's just walking around with, please, sir, don't weld me, face.
Nice callback.
Well, what's wild is that, like, skipping forward a little bit, when they're doing the tests of the cameras, Han and Giselle get closer than anybody else.
Right.
So let them do it. But no, somebody's got to drive the garbage truck. Anyway.
Still mad about that, but that's okay. Also, this movie fails Giselle. And just this franchise fails Giselle.
She's so great. It's like, literally, like, every scene with her and Han, I'm just like, my friends are here. I'm so excited to see them.
Right. Ooh, did we talk about the stare down?
No.
Okay, so for those of you who don't remember, Too Fast, Too Furious, one of the big conflicts with Roman and Brian later on is when Roman finds out that Brian let his mark go. Mm-hmm. You know, the dude in L.A. he refers to. So then when he meets him, Tyrese looks at Dom and it's like, you can read so much from that glance. Because I almost wonder how much of it is resentment, because there's so much going on in a way that Roman looks at Dom. Because clearly of anybody in the crew, Roman very much respects the fuck out of him. Mm-hmm. But I almost wonder for a split second, it's like, this is the dude that he was running off with when I got, you know, served up.
Right. It's these little moments where you realize, like, Tyrese actually is like a really good actor. He's not just there to be a dumbass. Or, you know, to be silly the entire time. Like, he actually, when he's given stuff to do, like, he does a really good job at doing all kinds of different things. He's great in Too Fast. Like, when they give him plenty of things to do. Like, it's kind of a bummer that he gets a little bit relegated to just being comedic relief later on.
Because that's not him. Like, yes, he's maybe the unconventional voice of reason, but he's very competent.
Yeah.
And honestly, he's probably a better shooter than, like, you know, some of the other ones. Like, one of my favorite bits in Too Fast and Furious, when Brian's like, oh, if Roman wanted to shoot you, you'd be already dead. Like, that's such a banger line to be like, yeah, my dude is a hell of a shot.
For as much shit as Too Fast got, like, I'm so hyped that we get to see those characters again and that they're brought in and that this movie actually acknowledges them and we get to move forward with them. I'm sad that Suki's not here.
I would love if Suki comes back for Fast 11 or whatever we're calling it. Like, bring back, what's her name? Gosh, Eva Mendez. Like, bring, where are the women? Bring the women back.
Right?
Like, what are we doing?
We'll talk about it later. I love the fucking 6-year-old logic of putting a webcam on a remote control car to spec the police station. That's so funny to me. That should not have worked.
It should not have worked because I just find it wild that all of that could have been blown if the dude looks in the box, which obviously I know that's the reason why Tyrese put it there. But what's to say that later on, someone wouldn't have gone back to be like, oh, no one's here. Like, let's just look in his box and see what they're, you know, cops are nosy.
Well, that's human nature. Like, we're all nosy. We're all curious.
Also, I just love that, like, all the stuff that people were brought in on, nobody actively got to do the thing they were brought in on. Like, every point, things just go sideways for them, and it's very funny.
I feel like this is a good time to kind of bring up the GTA aspect of this, because this is that part of the movie where we're just doing setup missions.
I love
it. The specs on the safe, fucking up the plumbing to install the cameras, getting the cars to fit within the window, like stealing the cop cars. Like, we're just doing setups in GTA. My last note on this is just, God forbid you be able to go to a hardware store and buy a drill. Am I right? That's for you.
I fucking love you so much. That'll never be funny to anybody else unless they're a part of our team.
So once upon a time in a faraway land back in 2019, Adrian is like, you should play GTA. You should play Grand Theft Auto Online with us. It was a bit of a sell because that's not the type of video game that I tend to play.
Right.
We know this. I'm a BioWare girl. Like, I'm an Elder Scrolls lady. Like, that's more my jam. So it was a little bit of a sell to get me to play it. But once I did and hooked up with the lovely gentleman that is our crew, like, I'm glad that you dragged me into this.
And I'm glad that you let me drag you into some goofy nonsense. And guess what? The tenure of our friendship has just been us dragging the other into ridiculous nonsense.
Yes.
And is that not what true family is at the end of the day? A message from the ad council? I don't know.
And so there's for the uninitiated, there's a DLC on GTA. It's called the Doomsday Heist. It's this movie, a lot of it. There's a lot of overlap.
Fast 8 is definitely Doomsday Heist.
Yes.
This would be like those first set of heists, almost like the Prison Break ones.
In watching this movie in particular, I feel the GTA in it.
Specifically us. And that's why it's so hard to talk about this movie without getting very inside baseball about the team and the crew. Because, like, you know, Roman being the unconventional voice of reason or saying something ridiculous, like, I hear mad. Mm-hmm. Or, like, when Hobbs is being very much Hobbs, I hear Dave. And, like, you know, I know we're just skipping ahead, but, like, the police car drag race is pretty much the team dynamic in a nutshell. It's me making fun of Mad. Of course, G's over here trying to, like, you know, go high stakes. And, of course, Atlas instigating, yes, as always.
Of course.
Because when dude's like, oh, let's make it a million, and then with the eyebrow raise, I'm like, I know that face. I've seen that face. I've known that face for 15 years.
I've lost to that face many, many times.
Yes.
We all have. It's fine.
We started doing like a cosplay thing, and then, you know, it actually ended up becoming a very like real thing, and it's very weird. And I guess in a way, that's why, you know, I know to get very like schmaltzy hard and asleep, but that's why I love these movies, because this is where Fast and Furious comes together, where it no longer is just about cars and explosions, even though there's cars, explosions, and a plethora of butts, geographically, you know, specific butts. But this is where the true heart comes in between all of the crew. And all those movies that people swore up and down were like weak entries are now validated in like huge ways and massive payoffs. And like from a lore perspective, this shit slaps to me. Like I eat this shit up.
When I think about these movies, I think about something that Greg Wyshynski said on a podcast one time. He's a hockey writer. He goes, those dumb movies make me cry every time. All that mm-hmm. schmulty stuff about family, like, I eat it up. I love it. It's great. And that's where I'm at, where it's like, both of those things can exist simultaneously. It can be a dumb car movie, but it is the family aspect of it. And of course, he does a bad Vin Diesel because he does a lot of bad impressions.
One sympathizes.
I mean, it's not much better than us just saying I'm Groot after everything, so it's fine. Both things exist simultaneously, but I think these movies would legitimately just be dumb car movies. These movies would just be like Gone in 60 Seconds, Italian Job, bullshit car movies, if not for the family aspect and the fact that these movies make you care about these characters.
1,000,000%. And that's just it. And I think where now this is the birth of what now is the relatively standard family dynamic, and we're now officially locked away from the like original kind of, I mean, there is a little bit of crossover of certain plot elements, mm-hmm. but we did put a very large pin on like everything leading up to like including Fast 4, which is kind of fucked up now that I think about it. Now that the Fast family is truly like formed, I mean, obviously we're not there yet. Like 6 obviously is where like it really holds in, so we're just kind of getting the introductory part. Is that why Vince died? I feel like it's almost eerie that just as this new family's formed, like whatever, like he's now the last tie to that initial group outside of course Mia.
Right.
It is kind of weird that he shuffles loose the mortal coil just as now this new group is formed. And now dude got kicked out, but comes back in now seeing that there's all these other people.
Yeah, I've gotten notes on that. I'm skipping a little bit ahead to the scene with the cars where Vin Diesel and The Rock meet up. Google says that Vin is 6 foot and The Rock is 6'4". I looked it up. Mm-hmm. This shot where they're staring at each other, about to kiss, sure looks like they're the same height. So now, on top of making Kathy Geis kiss already jokes, which is a 30 Rock reference that I'll give you the audio for so you can put it in.
Kiss, kiss, kiss!
Now I'm just picturing Vin Diesel standing on apple crates like Tom Cruise so that he looks tall.
And he's got to do that for Paul because Paul is taller than him uh-huh. by a pretty sizable margin.
The apple crates thing is extra funny to me for Tom Cruise because he's an egotistical crazy person who just happens to be 5'4". And like, just let the dude, we love a short king. Hello, welcome to the 21st century. Just be a short king. So the fact that like Vin Diesel's like legitimately like tall, but is just like surrounded by fucking giants and has to stand on his little apple crates makes me laugh.
I feel like the only person that got it worse was like Robert Downey Jr. standing next to like Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right. Did they put him on crates for that? Or did they just let him be a short king? I feel like he's shorter than...
I think he's shorter, but not by much. Okay. Because like, I think they definitely... He's more eye level in the movies than they are in real life.
Okay.
But I didn't do the math on that, so...
That's fine. That scene is very fun. Like, I like each one of these movies, we need the going out and doing the dumb car culture bit, especially because it happens like halfway-ish through the movie. Like, you're kind of expecting to see it already. You're like, you know, I'm over an hour in. Where are the headless torsos and asses? Where are my sexy lamps? God damn it. And that little Porsche that they end up winning looks like one of my comments.
Yeah, I think it's based off of the S2.
Yeah, which I think my S2 is that shade of blue.
Because I think I did the same thing. You know, if it's a car that was in the Fast movie, it's got to look like that car.
Yeah, of course.
And that car is so fun to drive in that game.
Right?
I also can't hear that scene without thinking of Billy. Because anytime this man yells, "This is Brazil," like I can't not think of Billy yelling that randomly for like with no zero context. Just
I did put a note about that. This is Brazil. Looks like a soundstage to me, but what do I know?
Come on, Nate. It's a lot of heat. Dude was not for it. Dude was just like, you know what?
We could do this in the air conditioning.
Right? Come on, H. The humidity's pretty high out here. It's a tropical climate. Come on, H. You know I'm from Alaska. I'm sorry. No one else is going to find it as funny as me now.
The next note I have is the cop car quarter mile thing is such a fan service moment. Luckily for them, I'm a fan, so I'm here for it.
If you were somebody who watched these movies as intensely as some have, all of this is just to make you just lose your shit.
Yeah. It's the perfect thing because essentially the scientific experiment, like all things created equal, they're all driving the same make model of a car. Let's see who wins. This is truly how we prove who the best driver is. And the fact that Brian wins, but it's kind of a gray area thing. Like, yeah, it's good. We love it. It's great.
No, I'm like, why didn't they just steal the cop cars to begin with?
I don't understand why that wasn't the plan. My guess is that the trying to cheat the camera montage was fun. It was fun for them to bake. And it's a fun part of the movie, but like it's unnecessary. We could have just skipped to the cop cars, but whatever.
Let's go back to Vince because, again, super interesting stuff here. So, you know what? Let's talk more about that because this is a heartbreaker.
My notes. Oh, no, we're resolving the Vince arc and then we're pointing out the cursed car. I've seen movies, RIP Vince. Quote, money will come and go, but the most important thing is the people in this room, .. and Vince.
Oh, no.
Vince, I got eyes on Mia. Immediately runs from police without Mia. Like,
hey, he is the first to call out there were cops, though, so he was basically on a cop watch.
That is true.
He did complete that task, though. So, you know what? Give my dude credit where credit is due.
Job failed successfully. I love that seeing Mia in trouble for Dom is like Popeye eating spinach. When Dom sees Mia caught by the cops, he like fucking like hulks out.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. It's family.
It is family.
Speaking of the whole fight, and I know obviously it's a whole point with him dropping the wrench down because
he's doing character arc.
Yeah, and it's the whole point is letting us know, even though we know, and Elena trying to let Hobbs know multiple times is you're chasing the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And that's where Hobbs, his whole character arc early on is he is pretty much the main antagonist because at this point he's almost borderline like psychotic. Like he's got a massive like kind of for Dominus crew, even though, yes, did they break out of jail? Yes. Of course, we don't know that they didn't kill the... And it's funny, even when they just flat out said, we didn't kill those DEA officers, he's like, oh, I don't care. I just got some names that were sent to me, like, you know, that
right.
dropped up on my desk. But it's like, is that really what that is, though? So, and that's what makes it even worse, is he knows then, if he's fully aware, at least in this part of the story, if he is aware that they didn't kill the cops, dude, it's just like, he's really just ready to kind of possibly kill them anyway.
That was kind of the note that I had about Elena. I don't know how to feel about her motivation. Sure, the gun down cop husband thing makes sense. Hobbs makes a big deal when he picks her, that he picks her because of her past, because he uses the word incorruptible, but she's corrupted by Dom almost immediately because Sad recognizes Sad. She tries to justify being on his side by asking them about because she asks him straight up, like, did you kill the agents on the train? And he tells her no. And she's, but like, if you're a cop and you're being asked to like help bring in these guys that did bad things, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
It shouldn't matter if they killed those guys or not. Like, if it should just be a file on a desk to her, unless her motivations are a little different.
But they probably wrote all that out. And right. to be fair, though, Dom does, and I'm just realizing this because I forgot, the, you know, she's yelling, you know, police at her, like, they already know who you are. He does keep her from getting shot to shit.
Yes.
So there is that aspect, which I just now remembered. So I don't know if that played into it at all, or is that just me trying to, like, play detective over here?
Which, hey, if somebody saves me from being actively shot in the face, I am going to have warmer feelings towards them than before they stopped that guy from shooting me in the face. So, like, I get it.
She's kind of pointing out that, like, okay, basically it's like they stay when they should leave. You know, they could have done this other thing, but they didn't. Like, you know, they could have killed all those guys, but, or like, you know, they gave away money. Like, basically, as she's trying to read the sheet of their actual, like, experts, like, yes, they are criminals at the end of the day, but if you dig a little deeper, their motivations aren't matching up. And him literally throwing the file is just like, you know, the other writer in the room being like, fuck all that. Like, it's like, I don't care. And that's what makes his motivation just weird. It's like, so are you, because I know he's obviously extra as hell, but is he going after everybody who hits his desk this exact same way? Because... But it's just weird to me. If he keeps saying that essentially they're just names, why the intensity? And also, shouldn't you be more upset at Brian than Dom? Like, why be more pissed at the career criminal than the one dude who went to become a cop and then betrayed the badge? Because one thing cops hate is a traitor or a perceived traitor.
And that's the thing. Like, the thing with between Dom and Hobbs feels weirdly personal for two dudes that, at least to my knowledge, and feel free to correct me if I am wrong, have never met each other until he showed up in Brazil chasing them.
Nope, not at all. There's no mention of him ever.
It's odd, which kind of leads to a question I had in my notes. So during the big gunfight out in the favela where Hobbs' squad eats it and Vince dies and gets shot and all that stuff, okay, here's the million-dollar question. Hobbs is basically a goner if they leave him. He's done nothing but make their lives miserable up to this point. Why save him? Just because he's a dude doing his job? Like, I don't know.
Can we talk about a thing that hasn't happened yet in 8? We did see 8. I don't mean like in 9 and 10 necessarily. This movie does this a lot where they have conversations that address things that I know people are asking because Charlize Theron kind of has a similar exchange with Dom in the plane in Fast 8 mm-hmm. when she's asking him about like the whole Robin Hood, steal from rich, get to the poor thing where it's like, all right, this dude nearly killed you and you let him go and all this. Because I think at this point, And I think I want to talk about this during Too Fast, Too Furious's. Dom and Brian clearly, and they when their paths separated the first time, they clearly rubbed off more on each other, whereas Dom was very much about like his family and whatever. I think he learned from Brian, and Brian learned more about loyalty, because not that old Dom would have left him for dead necessarily, but I think at that point, he did become a lot more compassionate. And also, it could have been very much, I don't want another dead cop we're going to get blamed for, but I think that ultimately to Dom, I don't know, like, it is a very good question, because yes, he doesn't gain anything from leaving him there, but I don't think that's the type of person Dom is, because even with all the rage or whatever, he still is very much like a sweetheart, so to speak. Even if he knows that his dude's probably going to try to arrest him still, I don't know, it just seems, it would be weird to see, because he doesn't really go out of his way to, like, go after people, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess, I don't know. That's a very good question. I mean, I cut all that out and just say, I don't know, because it is a really cool idea. This is more the Robin Hood Dom. Like, okay, he's already made peace, that lady's gone. He and Brian are obviously okay.
Yeah, they're good.
I don't know if maybe, like, the now this new crew is, now he's feeling more, like, paternal. I don't know. Like, it's a really cool concept, and try to figure out what were some of the motivations for him saving him, other than just not wanting to see someone just get like brutally gunned down by a bunch of people that they also hated. You know what I mean? Enemy of my enemy kind of shit.
Yeah. Well, because they are in the car with Hobbs and Elena has to set them free so that they can help shoot down Reyes's dudes. But all you have to do is go, hey, sister girlfriend, you should let us go so that we can help your dude. And then just don't help. It's a thing called lying. Like,
right. But I guess that today, that's kind of not who they are. It's like, yeah, they are. And I guess that's the difference between them and Reyes, or even, let's say, Hobbs' team. You know what I mean? Like, they, and that's what I guess Elena had been trying to show Hobbs, is they're not the type of people who are just murdering someone in cold blood and stealing money. Like, if they're doing any kind of criminal activity, there is some sort of, you know, reasoning or rationale behind it.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, they stole tankers of gas, but that was just to, oh, and that's what we should watch. It's very short. I don't know if it's on, it might be on one of the Blu-rays, but Los Bandoleros, the short movie that leads up to Fast Four.
Okay.
The tanker job was politically motivated.
See, the beginning of that movie, they're just stealing a thing of gas, and it makes no fucking sense, and I was pissed about it, and probably rambled on for 10 minutes about it.
Because, like, well, it does make sense, because, like, no more sense than, like, them stealing DVD players to fund their driving habit. Yeah, they're doing crimes, but they have a very direct reason to do it, whereas this one, that job was basically to fuck over the local, like, I guess whatever government's kind of been screwing up, because someone approached them about it.
Okay.
So, like, yes, they are doing crime, but it's like that idea that, yes, they're expendable, but also they clearly have no love for government or law enforcement, which then brings the whole, you know, Mr. Nobody stuff later on very interesting.
Yes.
But I think that's it. Like, you know, the whole time Elena's just saying, like, these aren't cold-blooded murderers. Now this gets confirmation from for Hobbs, be like, oh, this dude saved my life. And you would think that would be enough, but clearly it was not.
Well, I think we've just established that I am apparently a lot more ruthless than these fuckers are. So, neat.
In that situation, it's also not a fair fight. They were ambushed and they're just getting killed. And also, he's not their problem at this point. It's really Reyes, because that's the one that's really pissing them off. That's whose money they're stealing.
Right.
Hobbs just is essentially like Nemesis in Resident Evil. Dude just pops up, busts through a wall, and now you got to run from this asshole.
I was doing other stuff, man. Like,
right? I was shooting a fucking zombie. Now asshole in the trench coat is charging at me.
I'm busy. Like, the fuck?
Wait a minute. Take a number.
In a shocking turn of events, Vince dies. R.I.P. to a real one.
That sucked. Like, and I knew he was probably going to, because like I said, they make us like him enough so that way we feel something when he's gone.
Yeah.
But you really do forget that he's known that dude since they were, like, what, third grade?
Yeah.
And now he's got a family to leave behind.
Yeah.
He left his family behind like fucking Cookie Cat. I got eyes on Nico now, even though we never see him again in the other movies.
You know what? What's funny is that the movie ended and I sat there and I was like, okay, I know I haven't seen all of them, but from what I remember, we don't see that little kid ever again.
Well, at that point, that kid's got money. He's out.
Well, if Frank Ocean has taught us anything, you need more than money to raise children right. Otherwise, they turn into super rich kids.
So what you're saying is they should have taken Nico in.
Yeah.
What, are going to have like a Killmonger situation on their hands now? Not for nothing, though. That's actually kind of a cool twist.
Yeah, see, there you go. Copyrighted. We are mailing that to ourselves. That's ours. You can't have that.
Word. I like our movie better.
After Reyes kills Hobbs's dudes and Hobbs has feelings of anger, he gives into his feelings of anger and hate, and it leads to the dark side. So Hobbs is in now. The enemy of my enemy is enemy squared. Does Hobbs get a cut of the money?
No. I don't know. I don't think he's officially cut in for the heist. He was just there to kill Reyes.
The next thing I have in my notes is just we don't sneak. I picked the aggressive approach.
Damn, this really is the fucking GPA. Cause though they tried the stealth one, clearly didn't work. Nope. You know, they tried the what's the middle one for the casino heist,
the big con. Which they end up kind of doing aggressive big con approach. Well, more so in dealing with the safe.
Yeah.
With the trash truck and all that stuff. And the cop cars.
It would have been really funny, now that you mention it, if they did leave a bit of money for him in the safe. Also, speaking of which, and I'm sorry for jumping ahead.
No, you're fine.
If they had already switched the safe, why was it so important that they dragged the fake one?
I got notes on that, too. Because they were all like, oh my God. Acting like Dom was going to end the world or whatever. You know, we were all doing emotional ending of the movie shit. And I'm like, you know that they already have the good safe. This is the empty safe. Just cut the safe and leave. Why are we pretending like this is the emotional climax of the movie?
That is the one thing that bugged me, because it's like, why? Like, you could have just cut the safe at that point.
Yeah. We get this moment where Elena, like, pistol whips and holds at gunpoint this other cop. And I feel like it's supposed to be this, like, cathartic moment. But I'm pretty sure that they don't speak in this movie. Like, I think this, if I remember correctly, like, this dude talks shit about her to Hobbs, but, like, they don't have any interaction.
And as far as I know, she seems to be, other than that lady in the evidence room, is probably one of the very few women even working in that place. So unless that was just for the culture. Like, I'm just hitting you for the optics.
This is America. We love to see an asshole get pistol whipped. But, like, again, this movie's already, like, over 2 hours. So you could put in two short scenes of this guy being a dick to Elena so that this feels earned. Or just take it out. It was just a thing that I noticed that bothered me. I'm like, why are we going in so hard on this plot point? Like, I give a shit.
No, that dude sucked, though. I hope a toilet explodes on him next.
Yeah. The score is really good in this movie.
Brian Tyler is so good.
I don't know that I've ever commented on the score of these movies or noticed.
His first one was Tokyo Drift and then Fast 4. This is him. I almost feel like this was his MCU audition reel, because he goes so in on the soundtrack. Because I think right after this, he gets Thor, which I think was the first movie he did the music for. Mm-hmm. Which is why he didn't score the sixth movie, because they were being filmed at the same time. And that movie suffers for it, musically speaking.
This is just the first movie in which I noticed the score more than I noticed the soundtrack, which was nice.
Yeah.
It was nice to not be hyper-focused on all the Pitbull and whatnot weirdness.
Well, this one was cool because there was a lot of really cool, like, Brazilian artists, like, featured on the soundtrack, which is something they do a lot as far as the regional stuff. Yeah. And it's really cool. And also, this movie gives us the Fast and Furious theme song.
Yes.
My next note is, I'm not going to systematically ding this safe for all of the that's not how physics do dings, because I need to sleep at some point. So just add like 5 to the total and just label them driving a heavy safe around town. So I got lazy again. We were getting ready to go to bed.
And that's fine, because there's by the end of the movie, there's not a whole lot that's like going on character-wise. We're mostly wrapping up.
Mia, I'm hearing all this chatter. Did you guys just take out a bank? Me, yeah, you met them at a really strange time in their lives. Get it? It's a Fight Club reference. I've seen movies.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I just got that. Every minute.
It's this tiny little moment that just, again, reinforces Brian's character to his core. He and Dom are driving the safe around and they're doing chaos and they take out these 3 bus stops and the camera just cuts to Brian giggling at himself, at his own little nonsense that he's created. And to be fair, I was also laughing. So you know what, Brian, respect.
Right. And that's just a part of these movies. What also makes them fun is at the end of the day, they're thrill seekers.
Yeah.
It makes them doing the action so much more refreshing. Whereas in a lot of movies, the person that is doing the action is kind of unaware.
Uh-huh.
So, and it sometimes makes it hard to believe. So like, okay, the first Die Hard, all the action scenes are done with this guy completely out of his element. He's not even wearing shoes, for crying out loud. So he's right. Crashing through windows. He's run over broken glass.
Ugh.
And that's harder to believe in later movies when he's supposed to be the guy at the wrong place at the wrong time, but he's now leaning in on it, like where he's deliberately driving the police car up the ramp and hitting a chopper kind of shit. It's weirder because he's supposed to be like, oh, this is a bad idea. I can't believe I'm doing this thing that I'm clearly setting up to work.
Right.
Whereas these people are clearly like, they live off of this adrenaline rush. And that's why every time everybody's like, oh, you know, they're not car movies anymore. But it had nothing to do with just the cars. They just like putting themselves in mortal danger.
Right.
Like, that's their whole vibe. So anytime that they're just like, we got to settle down and have family, they're bothered by it.
This sounds fucked up. It's meth head behavior, but instead of doing meth, it's adrenaline.
Yeah, it's a cheap legal drug.
Yeah. The car hitting Reyes's car, I'm counting that. This is my last, that's not how physics do. I'm counting that as a separate, that's not how physics do. Also, if he had died there, it would have been a top tier, like, Disney villain death. Just the car falling on him. So funny.
Right, but it does give, well, we had to keep him alive just enough to do
yes.
Brian and Hobbs' character arc ending, because it also just shows that Hobbs clearly do just walk past and double taps him, not even looking at his direction. Like, that's some ruthless psychotic shit.
Yes, that's Hobbs.
They don't really go out of their way to like straight up kill a lot of villains in these movies. It tends to be another thing that takes them out, though I guess I don't want to talk about 9, but like more often than not, it's usually in a self-defense thing, like when ZZ got shot. So like Hobbs literally just running up and just gunning dude down and not even looking at him in the eyes. It's like, oof.
It's another really great, quick way to show the difference between his character and everyone else. I appreciate that it's there. I'm just saying, if he died from the car falling on it, it would have been very funny. And I would have laughed a lot.
Scream was great, though.
The ending speech that Hobbs gives them, the you have 24 hours, make peace with your demons. It's silly. He's just saying it because he feels like he has to save face, essentially.
And yeah, because at that point, he had to have known. Like, there's no way he knew that they were still dragging a safe for them, but it's still very funny. Because he's like, I'll see you soon. It's like, no, you won't. it's beautiful.
This is my actual nightmare. Imagine if you and your friends did all that work to get the safe back to the place, and then Tej couldn't get the safe open.
Yeah. Because anything could have gone wrong there. And I mean, I know there's, of course, the pause, though, the please don't be mean, where it's like, I feel like that would have been really funny to, like, make it look like it wasn't working, and then all of a sudden it just clicked over. Like, basically kind of hammering home the fact that, like, a lot of this is just luck.
Yeah.
But I know that's kind of vile to do at the end after all this stuff.
Well, and again, the movie's already over 2 hours, so, like, we need to get this show on the road. But again, that's just one of those things that, like, as Tej is, like, getting the safe open, I'm like, man, it would be really fucking funny if we dragged this out for a little bit longer. The last note I had was essentially just, like, I love that Eva Mendes was able to collect a check for essentially what was a mid-credits Avenger Initiative scene. So, good for her, man.
Also pretty wild because apparently Michelle Rodriguez had no idea that was going to happen. So apparently she went to go see it and saw the fact that, like, her character wasn't dead.
I'm sure she was hyped.
Well, yes and no, but it also leads into some stuff about, like, because obviously that was when she was having a lot of legal issues. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'll leave off on this, though, is that this plays into a thing where Finn manages to leverage his plot to get her back, because ultimately they didn't want her back. Because this is also after the whole thing with Lost and all the DUIs, where essentially they were trying to RDJ her, where it's like, nah, she's damaged goods. But not only did it bring her back, but becomes the focal point of the next movie. And it's kind of wild because that almost didn't happen. But that's all I got. This was fun. I don't know if we have more for anything else at some point, but, like, we're going to reference these movies a lot because as we're getting through them, we're going to constantly be referring back to old things. So hopefully people stick around for all of that.
Yeah. You can find us online, Twitter, Instagram. The handle is TLAT Podcast. I don't know what the Blue Sky handle is. It's something. It's TLAT Podcast at whatever bluesky.biz.
Yeah, because if you just search TLAT Podcast, you'll find. Did you really just say .biz? Oh, my God. I'm done.
We have an email address, TLATpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us. We would love to hear from you. Check out our website, adrianhasissues.com/TLATpodcast. The episodes are there. There's blog stuff there. There's lots of cool shit there. The website's neat. Go check it out. We have playlists on Spotify that coincide with old episodes, and also Tuesday Tunes, a thing that I do on Instagram that I am going to get better about doing, I swear. We are the number one podcast blocked by Smash Mouth. We love you all very, very much, and we hope that you don't get swallowed by a whale.
And if anything, swap out the... Well, no, the whale was swapped out for another whale, so it's not the same whale.
Yeah, that's right. We hope that if you get swallowed by a whale, it's the whale with the safe that has the money in it.
Good night. I'm like, I don't know. I fucked all that up.